Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Gamers Inn. I'm your host this week, Ryan Murphy. Jocelyn is in far, far away land. She's actually gone to Utah for Nerdtacular. It's crazy to think that that's already here, the final Nerdtacular. But I've brought a fellow non-Nerdtacular traveler along on the show. There's not many of them left, but we've got Val, longtime fan of The Gamers Inn. Val, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. I'm so glad that you're able to join me and that we can talk about all the fun things that are in your gaming life, because I know there's been a lot going on over the last few months since we spoke.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I can't wait to get into it, and I want you to start, but basically, you've been living a bit of a Fire Emblem envy as we've been playing a lot of Fire Emblem Heroes. Yeah. You know, I sneak it into the show every once in a while to make sure that I'm keeping all of the fans updated on our adventures in Heroes, but you're playing an older title. You're playing Conquest. You're still trying to swat away at that one, eh?
Yes. I've been playing it, I think the last time I checked was about 40-ish hours in. I'm at chapter 25, which is the later chapters, really. But that game is so much harder than Birthright. It's insane.
I know. Before Echoes came out, I started to play Conquest because I was like, I kind of wanted, you know, I finally finished Birthright, and I felt like I wanted another Fire Emblem experience because of Heroes before Echoes came out, and I realized that I've never played any of the other paths from Fates, and I tried Conquest, and it kicked my butt. It is very, very difficult.
At first, it was like people recommended to start with Conquest and start with Birthright, sorry. And I had never played a Fire Emblem title previously, so I followed the rules. But as I'm playing Conquest now, I'm like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. So the thing about Fates is, it's one of those games that offered branching paths, and we talked about it on the show previous, where there's, you know, three different paths, two of which were available on launch day, and the third you only should play after you finish the other two, so NeoGAF tells us. But Birthright's considered the quote-unquote easy path, and Conquest is considered like the classic difficult pass, and I think that Conquest was one of those games that still felt not quite up to par with other Fire Emblem games. I don't know. I didn't get very far. I got through chapter 6, and it kicked my butt, and then Echoes came out. So I think I played maybe 3 unique modes in Conquest. Okay. Now, so you're still working on Conquest, but have you played Birthright at all?
I finished Birthright. Finished one time completely, almost finished a second run after that. Because the first time, the way I play Fire Emblem games is I begin, first run is normal with permadeath enabled. Mm-hmm. And second run is casual because I want to see all the branching storylines between the characters and everything. Doing the same thing this time with the Conquest, and I am losing a lot of good units, and it's really pissing me off.
So in Fire Emblem, when a unit dies, it's dead forever, and their characters, not just, you know, Archer, Billy Bob, whatever. Billy Bob has a name. It's not Billy Bob, but, you know, we're just using that as an example. And when they die, they're gone forever. Now, that may differ depending on the character. If the character is key to the story, they do, like, limp off the battlefield. But all the other, maybe not, it's not even reserved to secondary characters, but just all the characters that they didn't need to keep around do die and cease to exist in the campaign. And I'm curious, so you're letting units die then? You're letting them go?
There are several units. I lost a lot of good units, but the thing is with Conquest is that sometimes a map can take like 15 minutes to complete. And on occasions, when I was 15 minutes in and I knew I was almost done, I don't reset my game at that point. If I lose somebody along that way, then all right, so be it. That's war. I mean, I'm not gonna play 15 more minutes Because like normal people, when I lose, for example, I remember I played recently and I lost Camilla. I'm like, no, I'm not losing Camilla. So I started again, but I lost some units that I really liked. And I was like, I don't want to do it again. I just want to keep going and finish the story. So yeah, I accepted my losses.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think the reason I stopped playing Conquest, or mainly I stopped playing because Echoes finally came out, and that's how long I was trying to beat Conquest for a good couple months. And with Conquest, I felt like I should have let characters die, because I would do the same map 5-6 times until I just got lucky enough to finish it. Yeah. And I think that's why I've been singing the praises of Echoes, is because it allows you to take those chances, and when they die, you rewind time. And exactly. Honestly, they can never do a Fire Emblem game without that mechanic.
Really?
Ever again. They can't. It is by far the best time saver of all time. Because you don't have to rewind, but for me, I want to save all my characters. And I found rewinding was actually making me more, you know, think more with tactics, right? Because I was able to try different things without having to slog through the map all over again.
But I haven't played Echoes, and I plan on playing it eventually. That's why I want to finish Conquest and then move on to Revelations and then move on to Echoes. But doesn't the fact that permadeath is kind of gone, or you can rewind, that was always present in older titles, right? Or was that just for Conquest and Birthrights?
What do you mean? The rewind?
No, the permadeath system, that was always there.
Oh, it was always there, yeah, for sure. Okay. It was one of the... It's actually not just a Fire Emblem thing. It's actually a key, you know, pillar of a lot of these tactic games. Okay. XCOM does it.
Okay.
Although in XCOM, when a character dies, that character is only as... You're only attached to it as much work you put into it. Like, you can name the character and customize him in whichever way you like, but if he were to die... Really, it's just his or her skill sets that go missing. I mean, you can easily dress up the next person that comes by with a cool mustache and a slick hat, you know, and have them look the same. But I'm glad you're still playing Conquest. I think those Fates games, Awakening was just so huge, and then
I finished Awakening too.
Yeah, and Awakening was just so big a deal for the series that when Fates came out, I felt like it was just bloat. Like, just there was a lot of it all at once.
Yeah,
and I got lost in it. I barely finished Birthright and then started to play Conquest, and I love Fire Emblem, but I felt like it was a bit too much.
I started playing it because you talked about it on the Gamers, and I didn't even own a system. I didn't even own a 3DS. I rented a 2DS out of a mom and pop rental store that I have here where I live. And they were kind enough to let me rent a 2DS at the same time as the cartridge to test it out. And I played it for a week, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting a 3DS. This is really, like, really, really fun and really my type of game, because I really liked the whole idea of the two kingdoms fighting each other, and you can choose one path or you can choose the other. I was, like many people, annoyed by the fact that it's three games in total. That's like a cash grab for Nintendo, and I wasn't too happy about that. But I feel like the games are different enough in terms of gameplay, and even at a certain point in terms of story, that they're worth the price mark if you're willing to pay it.
Yeah, I didn't get far enough into Conquest to start to realize the differences between the story. I mean, the story was definitely a differing path, and you know, the way the characters approached their different scenarios was very evident, but I don't think I got far enough where I was coming across missions that were incredibly different. Like, I think where I ended very early was where you go to the ice tribe and try to stop them from fighting, and you do the exact same thing sort of with the other one. You end up fighting them, but it's for a different reason. You're like, we want you to team up, and I'm like, no, you're liars, you're actually the bad guys. Okay, let's fight. And that was about it.
I think that what I discovered, and I might be wrong, fans of the who have played it many times will probably correct me, but I think Conquest is Birthright backwards. You're going to Hoshido instead of going to Nor, so you're doing the path backwards.
So once in Conquest I start moving towards Hoshido, then it should become different. And I don't think that happens until after the mission that I just finished. And, you know, I dig what Conquest is offering, but I'm still working my way through Echoes. And the characters in Echoes have actually started to, you know, grow on me. What I'm actually doing, and this is going to sound silly to everybody, but if you're a listener of the show, you know that I've done this in the past, but I'm actually playing on the treadmill and, you know, juggling between headphones and my phone, and it's incredibly dangerous. I don't know how I haven't fallen on my face yet, but I don't know. It's how I'm rolling on the treadmill right now is with the little Echoes, and it's all voiceover, of course. So whenever some important dialogue comes up, it's like, all right, switch the old headphones out of the phone and stop listening to the podcast into the 3DS, and let's get going. And surprisingly works quite well, and I'm enjoying my time with Echoes, even if it feels like I'm running towards a carrot. But
I play Fire Emblem on my stationary bike, mm-hmm. and I have trouble playing it sometimes. How the heck do you hold a 3DS on a treadmill?
I did a lot of treadmill with the controller. So basically with Fire Emblem, it's about coordinating, you know, making sure, okay, I just need to not fall for the next 5 seconds while I queue up the next move. And then, you know, you go two-handed, and then you go one-handed and run for a stretch, watch the battle, and then pick it back up. It's like any other game, like Hearthstone or any other game that people have played on the treadmill in the past. It's just you queue up your move, take a break, focus on running. Oh, time for my next move, do my move, focus on running. And that's basically what I'm doing. It's not a perfect system. I'm sure, like a lot of people, you know, are probably looking, it's like, I'm a gamer. And even I know, Ryan, you just need to go outside. It's beautiful out. I know you live in Canada. I know, but that doesn't mean it's snowing all year round. It's the end of June.
Yeah.
It's been raining a lot, guys. So
here too.
Yeah. So I'm inside on the treadmill, but I promise you eventually I will be getting outdoors and listening to podcasts. So I'm not going to listen to the outdoors, but I should probably see it every once in a while.
Don't you
want to
listen to the birds, Ryan?
No, around here, it's not mostly birds. It's mostly just random kids screaming. So,
okay.
Suburban life. So, Fire Emblem Conquest, have you been playing much Heroes lately, or are you out of that?
I'm out of that. Yeah? I tried it, but I liked it at a certain point. But every single time, well, for me, I tried pooling heroes a couple of times, and I got a couple of doubles, and I was like, I mean, it's so hard to get those orbs at one point without paying for them.
Yeah.
That I thought it wasn't fair to always. I got the same archer dude, I forgot his name, twice.
Viridian or Viridian.
Exactly. I got him twice. I'm like, I'm already not using him. I don't want him a second time. And I got Crom at one point. I was really happy about that. I want to go back to it because you guys play it a lot. They play it a lot in the Discord channel. And I keep hearing about it a lot online. Mm-hmm. It's just watered down a little too much for me.
I totally understand, and I think it is a free-to-play game, so it is going to be one of those games where you feel like you want just a little bit more out of it, and it's not going to give it to you, at least right away. And yeah, the orb thing, it is a concern. Now,
yes.
Don't want to freak anybody out. I've been playing every day since launch, and that varies from checking in to playing maybe an hour on the couch as I go through different quests and stuff. They've really expanded upon the quest system.
Okay.
But I feel like in order to get maximum gameplay out of it, you need to have at least four characters level 40. And, you know, but they're adding content at a steady clip. Like, they're always adding abilities to get more orbs. So right now I'm sitting at like 70 orbs because I've got a good solid team and, you know, only pull when I feel there's a character that I want. Now, they've been adding a lot more unique characters, which could both make people happy and also make people a little upset. So, for example, Lin, my favorite game or character in the game from the first GBA game that came over here in the States, I did not get her normal character, but they added brides to the game.
So, oh, okay. I saw those.
Yeah, and I got Bride Lin, but she's actually really good, a really good addition to the team. A lot of the brides that came out actually are really good. So that's the other stickler, is that like you know, the brides that they added were very good, but it feels weird kind of playing as a character who clearly doesn't want to be dressed up in a wedding dress. But
well, I saw the Easter ones too, and I was like, really?
Yep, the Easter ones are another one, and they're adding more tomorrow, no, Friday, and it's the Summer Fest. So two bikini ones and two very scantily clad men characters. So the men are getting in on the fun. You know, it's I think it was Robin and then Frederick from Awakening.
Okay, they're both from Awakening.
And then there was another Tiki. I don't know. And then one.
Oh, please, she has the body of a child. It's awkward.
Oh no, this is like adult Tiki, so they.
Oh, thank God.
It's not any better, but it's still like scantily clad anime lady. But the internet will love it. Reddit's all over it. It's gonna be a big thing. So I don't know if that convinces you. I don't know if I'm trying to convince you.
Well, no, I mean, you're playing it. When I was playing it, a lot of people on the Discord channel, like I said, I have them in my list of players. So I always found that it was always a little fun when I logged in, like, oh, I'm saying hi from Jim the Shovel. I'm like, aw, sweet.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, the interactions between players aren't as great. Like, they're very minimal. Even though you have a friends list, it only impacts you very minimally each day, and there's no direct connection between you and your friends. Now, that being said, sometimes I think there's a mode that's active right now, which is the Voting Gauntlet. Which is the other thing, is they've added a lot of other extra modes since launch. Well, two specifically, the Voting Gauntlet and the Tempest Trials, which again reward more high level play, but there are options to play with whatever level characters you do have and make a progress there. So I don't know. Every time I get bored, they seem to add something new, and I have no problem just booting the game up quickly each day, collect my orbs or collect whatever free stuff they're giving me, and then hit right out. And honestly, if you are interested in playing or only interested in keeping up with the free rewards, because they offer a ton of orbs for free, sometimes in big bulk, if you go to bit.ly/TGI Discord, join the Discord, Drelfear in the Fire Emblem Heroes or the Fire Emblem channel. He always posts really great stuff. He's all over it. And, you know, faster than me, because I get most of my news from Drelfear in the chat room. So definitely check that out if you're interested in at least keeping up with Fire Emblem Heroes, because there's not something new every couple weeks. I wanted, before we move on to the second playthrough and Persona 5 that you've been playing, I wanted to chat a little bit about Dead Cells.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm interested in that.
Yeah, so this is an early access title on Steam. Now, they have confirmed Mac and Linux support coming with the full release later this year.
Okay.
But the Steam release, and there's been, you know, teases about a Switch version, which honestly would be amazing.
That would be great on Switch, yeah.
Yeah, Dead Cells is this Rogue Legacy, roguelite / Metroid game where you play as a, I don't know, you kind of play as this weird, like, piece of moss that takes over dead bodies. And you have to traverse this Metroidvania-style map as you slay demons, collecting cells, and making your way through the map. And when you die, you reset to the front of the map, and you lose all of the power-ups that you've gained. So the point of the game is to collect as much power as you move forward, collecting these cells that act as a currency to unlock permanent upgrades. Those upgrades are like extra weapons at the start, extra damage on a specific weapon, extra bonuses, like you keep 25% of your gold when you die, stuff like that. It's honestly super addicting. It's a really great game to jump in, do a few runs, jump out. I have not experienced the entirety of the game, but for an early access title, it's very solid. There's a lot in there. It feels done.
If it weren't
for the early access sort of message at the beginning, you'd probably think, like, this is good to go, guys, you know?
I was wondering, I never purchased an early access game before. Did you buy it full price, or?
So it is, well, right now it's on sale for 15% off. Now, it is full price. So early access is a program where most of the time, I believe, the game is offered at a specific price that it will then be at launch. you're, think of it this way, you're pre-purchasing a game, but instead of waiting for the game and giving them all your money, they're giving you the stable version that they have for you to consume at right now at this time. Sometimes early access is a bit of a bust, and they give you something that is very unstable, but still it's like, that's what you paid for. You paid for early access. This is early. But other companies like the devs behind Dead Cells are using this ability to put out, I'd say, what feels like 0.8 of a game that's on its final stretch with testing and content. And it gives you the ability to offer feedback on the game, because the cool thing about their patch notes is they actually mark down what was community suggested. And I think that's awesome. It's really good to see developers highlighting what was, you know, their community's idea and saying, we felt this was really worth adding, and it was actually the community's idea. If you buy one game on the Steam sale, this is the one to get, because honestly, it's a lot of fun. You have to kind of like those style of games, but...
isn't it comparable to games like, what's the name, Dark Souls?
A little bit. It's a little bit like Dark... Like, the combat at the beginning feels a little cumbersome, but once you get the, you know, the attack dodge, you know, use your ability type mechanics, it does feel solid. I wouldn't quite put it right up against Dark Souls as if it was like super difficult and punishing. You certainly feel like you have power, but the further you progress into the rooms, the more you realize that you need to, you know, grind for some upgrades before you enter the next area, because you will be put in your place by the enemies.
Yes. Do you lose all your power-ups when you die, or you keep those you were able to unlock?
So you keep progression with the ones you're able to unlock with your cells, but you do unlock, sort of as you go forward in your run, you will unlock these plus one to skill, health, and strength. Those disappear when you die, as well as all the cells you were carrying that you weren't able to cash in. Those disappear as well. But when you spend them, they are then locked into whatever upgrade you put them into, so you don't lose them after you've spent them. It's actually a really neat system, and there's like, you know, little you know, tweaks on the gameplay where you'll come across like an elite enemy that is difficult to kill, but when you do kill them, you unlock a couple items and like 10 cells. So it's worth going after that bounty. Other times there are chests, and there are like these haunted chests or corrupted chests where they give you a lot of rewards, but then they put a curse on you where you have to kill 10 enemies without being hit. And if you get hit, you die instantly. But it's a high risk, high reward type deal where you're collecting a bunch of stuff from that chest, but you're also collecting a curse at the same time.
It's fairer than I thought. I thought that when you died, you lost all your progress. But no, you do get to keep some of it. So in my mind, it's more fun than, like, for example, I don't know. I don't think you lost everything in Dark Souls, but you lost a lot. And to me, those types of games that are quote-unquote punishing, I never understood why people like those games. They're so... I don't like to get angry at a game.
No. I used to play games that would frustrate me, and I came to a point where I don't have a lot of time for video games, so when I'm playing a video game, it has to be rewarding on a fun factor. And I think Dead Cells mixes, similar to Fire Emblem, mixes that enjoyment / challenge / frustration very well. Yeah.
Yeah. I stopped playing Conquest last time because I got frustrated.
Yeah, and I've certainly done that with Fire Emblem. Like, I angrily resetting my 3DS. It's a Fire Emblem tradition. But Dead Cells feels fine when you die. Like, when you die, it's like, well, I had a good run. Let's do it again. And that feels good. Yeah. And it is early access. It's only on Windows right now, but will be on Mac and Linux in the near future with the release. Mm-hmm. So I know if you are on a Mac, you'll probably have to run it in Parallels or whatever.
I'm just going to wait.
certainly wait. Honestly, I think the final version, they're just going to be adding more content, more features. There's no harm in waiting for an early access game to release. But yeah, I've enjoyed my time with it, and I can't wait to play more of it. And when it comes out on Switch, I will certainly be picking it up again, because it on the go would be amazing. I cannot wait.
It looks made for Switch.
Yeah, it's one of those like indie titles that you kind of want to take with you, and would probably look beautiful on both television and that small crisp screen. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. But I'm also curious about Persona 5. Now, we've had a few people on the show talk about Persona 5. Josh was on, I think, about a couple months ago, and he was talking about his time with Persona 5. Now, quickly, what are your thoughts on Persona 5? Are you really enjoying it?
I am enjoying it, but I don't know how it was for the person who talked about it before. This is my third Persona game in that franchise, because the Persona games were a little bit different before. The whole like time management aspect of it came, I think it was with Persona 3. I might be wrong about that, but I played 3, I played 4, now I'm at 5. It's an amazingly stylish game. That's what I love about the Persona franchise in general. The menus are stylish. The loading screens are stylish. Game. Even when you talk to your other teammates on your cell phone, the menu is really cool. Those games look great. I still love the game, even though I have put it down for a little bit. Because what I've always been a little bit bothered about Persona in general is that you have to follow a very strict timeline. Everything happens within a couple of weeks or a month. You always have a deadline for each mission all the time. And it just gets a little bit linear, I'd say. It doesn't get boring because the game is still very fun. But like I said, this is my third Persona game. And although Persona 5 adds new mechanics, sorry, it's still very much the same as 2 and 3.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I think the style of the game is really neat. It looks amazing. Like, you know, if you're a fan of anime, that's or even just, you know, animation in general, I think they've done a really good job. Are you saying the music is good, eh?
It's good too. As a fan of music and, well, music in games, each dungeon has its own music. It's different all the time. Some of them get just cooler as you go along. Some of them change depending on the rooms that you find yourself in. They're so cool looking.
and as a, you know, I've definitely had this conversation before, and I want to get your take on it, but Persona 5, as someone myself, as someone who has never played a Persona game, is this one to get into, or do I start with 4?
I'd say start with this one, because the mechanics that might be a little more frustrating in 3 and 4 are pretty much gone. It's tweaked to be, I think I find it more accessible than the previous two. I would definitely go with this one if you've ever played it. If you've played JRPGs before, you know the gist. You know how most of the battle systems work. It's pretty much the same, but they added stuff. Like, for example, this time you get to actually negotiate with the persona before you can capture them, so to speak. Before, you just captured them and that was it. This time you can actually talk to them, and sometimes they won't join you right away. They're like, okay, well, F you, I'm not deciding, I don't want to go with you, I don't want to join your cause or whatever, and then you have to finish them off. That wasn't there before. That's interesting. There was also more movement on the map. Before, you just kind of went on your way in a very linear way in the dungeon. This time you get to jump around and move a little more. You can jump in this one fine.
Okay. Well, you know, I think when I right now I'm heading towards you know, my impending doom that is a second child, and you know, as most people think, that might actually take time away. I think I'm working it, so I will be taking time off work. And hey, baby's got to sleep, right?
Yep.
So you get there. And anyways, yeah, Persona 5 sounds great. I honestly, it's something that I have an interest in. I like the ideas of JRPGs.
Yes.
But for some reason, they have a hard time clicking, and then they have a hard time keeping my interest. Final Fantasy 15 clicked with me, but it didn't hold my interest for some reason.
And I played a lot of JRPGs before in my life, and I don't know, Final Fantasy 15, it's weird what I'm going to say, but it sounded too Western for a JRPG because it's so open world, and I had just finished a little earlier The Witcher 3, and it felt like I was playing, well, didn't feel like The Witcher 3 because The Witcher 3 is awesome, but it kind of felt I was just exploring a big open map again, and I'm going there. And it just felt a little disjointed. For me, what really turned me off was a bit of the storyline because, spoiler, the city that the main character's from gets attacked, your father gets killed, you learn that, and then there's this chick that tells you, oh, can you go get this can of oil for me in the desert? I'm like, sure, my dad and my whole family are dead, but yeah, I'll go get that for you, hot mechanic chick.
I'll also fabricate a zipper for your shirt because clearly it's broken. Yeah, I don't know. That game had some really weird things for just going on with it. And, I enjoyed it. I feel like I could probably pick it up no problem again. I enjoyed what I played of it. I don't know. I liked what I was playing and I liked the characters that were popping up, but there were just these like glaring issues that would pop up. And one of those is Mechanic Lady, McMooberton McMechanic or whatever the heck her name is. I can't remember. Oh, wait, it's Sid, right?
It's Cindy, I think. Yeah.
So she kind of stood out really weird. And then there was this other guy who had a real like, I want to get those gems for me. See?
Yeah, like that too.
Really weird voice acting in that one.
Really kind of bad voice acting?
Some of it was bad. But then, like, some of the bad VO then became good again. Like, when every time in battle, someone would go, hey, Pronto, get this shot. Cool shot, bro. And I don't know what he actually said. It's been too long. But I don't know. JRPGs, I think Persona 5 is one of those high-heralded games that it could certainly be one that I pick up. But finally, in what we're playing here, you are on your second playthrough of Andromeda. Now, I don't say that like I'm surprised. I say that like I'm glad people are playing Andromeda, but I have not had time to go back for a second playthrough.
You finished, right?
I did finish it, and we did not do a spoiler cast on here, and I don't know if we ever will, because there's no point in spoiling a game that is probably not going to be continued. Which, you know, quick take, how did that make you feel when you found that the story that you just experienced and are experiencing again may not get a continuation?
Well, I'm keeping my hopes up because BioWare will not trash the Mass Effect franchise completely, even if this one was kind of a hurdle in the whole series. They've put it on hold. They haven't said that they've completely scrapped it because, let's be honest, they're coming out with another project, Anthem, and they're also coming, I think they're working on Dragon Age currently as well. So to put Mass Effect on the back burner for now seems like a good idea.
Yeah, and they have that Anthem project in Edmonton, and they have their Dragon Age team, like you said, working on Dragon Age 4. And the thing is, you can only work on so many projects at once. And the way we got into this problem in the first place was BioWare working on many projects. And we're not even talking about their Southern studio working on, you know, Star Wars Old Republic. So you're right. It's a good time to shelve it. Now, they probably hoped that they would they would just be able to roll into a sequel. But we've talked about that before. So I do want to know, what was your reasoning for going back for a second dip in the old Andromeda pool?
I wanted to play it differently. For starters, I'm playing as a male character now instead of a female one. Just because I find that the BioWare games, I did the same thing for Dragon Age. There's enough difference in interactions between the character as a male versus a female that it's worth going back to play a second time again. I'm also playing it differently. The first time I played it, I just focused on the first time I played it, I found it a little overwhelming because there were so many things to do. You had tasks. You had mission stories, you had character quests, you had other types of things. You needed to unlock your memories, blah, blah, blah. this time I've decided, okay, I'm just going to do one planet at a time. I'm going to do what I can, the most of what I can do on one planet, get it to 100% vitality. Then I'm going to move on, maybe advance the story a little bit more or talk to my characters a little bit more. But I like the gameplay. I mean, the combat was fun. I also like the whole idea of being able to switch between your powers. That was really cool. You're not tied down to being a biotic, or you're not tied down to being an engineer. You can actually use that a little more. And and I also needed a break from, like what I said, from the very linear way of Persona. I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to hop back into my spaceship and just go wherever I want to go again. And that's why I started a second playthrough. I think I'm like 30 hours-ish in my second playthrough.
I played Andromeda as a female character this time around, thinking that the first trilogy I played through as, you know, male Shep, generic ass John Shepard, and he was fine. Yeah, no, he's good. But I always felt like I was missing out, because a lot of people said, like, no, like, Femme Shep has the best voice acting and is just a more of a badass. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a great idea, but I just never stuck with it because I only have so much time and there's so many games coming out. Mm-hmm. And with Andromeda, I actually really enjoyed playing as Sarah Ryder. And I enjoyed the story and I enjoyed where it ended. And I was thinking, like, yeah, like, let's do some more in this galaxy. And just, I'm like you, I'm holding a hope that, yeah, it makes sense that they will continue the Mass Effect franchise is not dead. Even if it takes 6 years to go back. Like, look at what happened at E3 when Nintendo announced Metroid Prime 4. Like, no franchise is dead.
Yeah.
When it comes to these big franchises, I mean, I'd say Mass Effect is probably one of the highest regarded, you know, franchises that BioWare has.
Yeah. Well, I am sad, although, that no story DLC has been announced at all. And that's surprising for me.
Yeah. BioWare is usually, like, pretty snappy on that. And honestly, I was pegging as the DLC coming out would have been pretty great, and which is the other arcs that launched late. And they set it up with the ending. Especially, I mean,
that's what I was going to say. The way they set it up in the end of them was like, And there's also the whole thing with the Angara. You learn a big, big spoiler about them, like, a little towards the end. And that isn't really explored further down the line. No. And I was like, oh, I want to learn more.
Yeah, like, but those, you know, that and the, like, very ending scene felt like, this is sequel material, but the Corian arc distress signal or warning, this is getting into spoiler territory, but honestly, like, this has been covered elsewhere. And honestly, it's not a spoiler because, you know, they explain it very clearly at the beginning of the game. It's like, oh no, like those ships launched late.
Yeah.
And the way the game works is that you get there and then you're like 7 years late or however long.
Yeah,
it's a weird time jump, but it makes sense narratively. But anyways, I'm glad you're still playing Mass Effect Andromeda. I really enjoyed it. I loved the combat, the way people moved, and I jump in and play multiplayer every once in a while. The combat is just a lot of fun, and I just hold out hope that eventually BioWare will release some sort of story DLC to give this game closure. You know,
They've released so many patches since then, and they are still working on it. I mean, for crying out loud, they changed a character. Well, they didn't change, but they upgraded a character's sexuality completely, which means they either re-recorded dialogue and redid scenes and stuff like that. So I'm like, they're still clearly working on it. So I'm still hoping that we'll get some kind of story DLC that will bring some sort of closure.
Now, I mean, I know they've tried with the text updates for the multiplayer, but, you know, if you do a quick search for Andromeda, there's both, you know, there's one story 3 days ago, Mass Effect Andromeda DLC hopes end as latest multiplayer missions go live. And then an article just 19 hours ago, Mass Effect Andromeda devs tease new DLC. And it's like, everybody is just clamoring for something from BioWare. And there is a team at Montreal, the Montreal studio, that's working on it. But I think it's a matter of waiting. And I think you're right. Like, even if we're concerned for Andromeda, we shouldn't be concerned about Mass Effect because this is a major franchise. It makes EA buckets of money. So anyways, that's what we're playing, and I want to thank the patrons, the lovely patrons, including Val, I believe, is a patron, and Daniel and Steven, new patrons this week. Thank you very much. If you want to join the ranks of these fine folks, go to patreon.com/thegamersin, like The Geek Review did, who is sponsoring this episode. The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, Discord, YouTube, and at Geek Review, or sorry, at thegeekreview.podbean.com. Check it out. Now, Val, the reason I asked you to be on the show is because of the announcement of the Super NES Mini that is coming out in September.
Yeah.
You know, I have been incredibly busy at work where I haven't been able to keep an eye on the happenings in the video game industry as much as I used to. So this popped up and I was like, holy crap. It had already exploded by the time I got around to it. And this is the NES Mini, but it's the Super NES. And yes. They've addressed a few concerns. One, so we're going to get these concerns out of the way. One, two controllers in the box. Boom. Yay. That's really good. Now I only have to rush to pre-order one thing instead of two. Two, it's coming out in September, end of September, at a price of $100 Canadian.
Oh, that's fine.
That's okay, I guess. Two controllers and it's good. It's going to go right beside my NES Mini and it's going to look perfect. And the other thing is they've said they're going to produce way more this time. A significant amount. And pre-orders have not gone live here.
No.
In North America. They have gone live in Europe, and there's news out saying that the pre-orders that have gone out in Europe have actually been the total amount of NES classics sold in Europe. So there was a number that was like, holy crap, they're actually making a lot of these. So that's exciting to hear. When we'll get to pre-order it, I have no idea. Probably in the next couple months. Now, games, 21 games.
Yeah, do you have them in front of you? Because I don't.
I do, yeah. So the link in the notes, if you click on that and you open it up, you'll see. I won't start with the one that you're really looking forward to, but I will start with the one that kind of came out as a bit of a surprise. We're finally getting a release of Star Fox 2.
Star Fox 2, yeah.
Which is a game that never got released. And we already said that. It's never been released. It was finished, but never released due to the fact that it was finished right around the time the N64 was coming out. And so the Super NES Classic includes 21 games. It's got your, you know, your expected titles, Super Mario World, Super Mario Kart, Link to the Past, F-Zero, Super Metroid, and then, you know, like we said, Star Fox, Star Fox 2. And then you get into the third party slash more Nintendo games that don't get top billing, but you're excited about Secret of Mana.
I am. Secret of Mana was a game I played so many times as a child, and well, as a teenager slash kid. And it's also a game that I have good memories of because it was a multiplayer game at the time. It was one of those rare JRPGs that you can actually play on the same screen with a different person because you have three characters in your party, and another person could control another one while you were controlling the main character. And I just played it with my brother. I played it with some friends as well. It's really a gorgeous, gorgeous game. Even if it's pixel art. The music is great. The story is great. I love that game so much.
Never played it. I might have like booted up a reboot or a remake of some kind in the past, but it's something that I know is up there. A lot of people really love that game, and I never played. Now, my favorite game from the Super NES is Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. Honestly, I will hum the music from that game unexpectedly, just out of nowhere, and it's such a great game, amazing music, and the combination of characters that they've done, you know, the weird talking sword that like slams into Bowser's castle, like basically Santa Claus is the enemy, like a really weird looking Santa Claus. I can't wait to play these games. You know, let's go through the rest of the titles here. You got Street Fighter 2, no brainer, Super Punch-Out, Castlevania 3, 4, 5, that's 4.
Four, yeah.
Donkey Kong Country, the only Donkey Kong Country, am I right? Mega Man X,
that's
Super Mario.
One of my favorites, though, Mega Man X.
Yeah, I've never played, I'll be honest, I've never played a lot of Mega Mans, only two upon people's request. But, you know, Yoshi's Island, we talked about Star Fox, Kirby's Dream Course, which is a golf game.
It's fun.
yeah, a lot of these games are fun. And that's the difference between the NES Mini and the Super NES Mini, is that the Super NES had a lot of games that were fun and looked good, even if they weren't like top notch. But on the NES, when a game was bad, you felt it.
Oh yeah,
pretty hard. And a lot of these games that they've listed here, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Earthbound. Yeah. Honestly, first time I ever played Earthbound was on the Wii U. But the first time I saw it was this really weird, huge box. At a friend's place, and I was just like, what the hell is this? What is Earthbound?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I had no idea what it was. But, you know, Final Fantasy III, which I think is like five in Japan?
It's six in Japan.
Six? Okay. And then you got Kirby Superstar, which is eight Kirby games or eight games in one. But this is a solid solid list of games. Are there any on here that you feel are missing?
Any that I feel I would have put Chrono Trigger, but that would have maybe be pushing the envelope a little bit too far, because I'm pretty sure that this game still sells very well. I believe they made a DS version, I'm not sure, but that's pretty much the only one I would have liked to see there would have been Chrono Trigger, because to me, they have a lot of games that I've played a lot already. They have a lot of RPGs, which I was really surprised by. I thought it was going to be a little bit more platformers.
Yeah, they've gone, you know, a long way to kind of get the heralded games on there. Obviously, they've included all of their major titles. I don't think they're, you know, they're missing some sequels. Like, maybe you could have thrown an extra Donkey Kong in there.
Yeah, maybe.
But honestly, one is probably sufficient. you know, I think this is a good round of games. And honestly, there are some on here that I fully expected them not to include, like Super Mario RPG. I could see them not including that one.
Yeah, me too. I was surprised when I saw it.
I didn't even know it was on here until I loaded it up. Like, I knew the top tier games, but the fact that no one's screaming from the rooftops that Super Mario RPG is in here, I love that game.
Well, I'm so happy. Much. I'm happy it's there, because as a kid, I didn't own that many titles. Secret of Mana was a title I owned. Super Mario RPG, Earthbound, Yoshi's Island, those were all titles I rented. Mm-hmm. So never finished them. So to me, to buy this system and to get the chance to finally experience those games to their end, I'm like, for me, I'll pay the $100, whatever Canadian that I need to pay, because those games, there's so many hours of play time in those games.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned, it's interesting you mentioned that you're going to finish these games, because when I think about the NES Mini, it was a, hey, everybody gather around for 15 minutes and let's play a couple NES games, this will be really fun.
Yeah.
This looks like something that I would be like, no, I'm just going to sit here and pretend I'm a kid again and play one of these games where I actually want to make some progress. But there are games on here that, A, I haven't played in 20 plus years, but also games on here that I never finished. Earthbound, Star Fox. Right. I never even played Star Fox. No one's played Star Fox 2.
I played Star Fox. You've never played Star Fox on the SNES?
No, I you know, the only time I remember playing Star Fox was, and I was creeped out by the puppets, so I never played it. And I was at on Ontario Place, which is this like, it's kind of, I think it's like this, it's like a fair, or the CNE, it's like a water park or something here in Toronto, and they had Legoland and Nintendo Land at Ontario Place, and in Nintendo Land they had a Star Fox unit where you could play it, and I remember I would not go near it as a kid because the puppets freaked me out. They were like faux real. I couldn't quite explain it, but all the puppets just like freak me out. That's why I look at the Star Fox 2 art and I'm like, yeah, cartoon. Yay, I can handle that. Weird fake like I'm looking at the Star Fox logo and I'm just getting the heebie-jeebies looking at Star Fox. He just looks like he's like you stuffed a fox, made him stand up, and I don't know, and you dressed him up in a weird coat. I just
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, just it gives me the heebie-jeebies. Anyways, the Super NES Classic Edition coming out September 29th. Honestly, everyone should have seen this coming. I was in EB Games on Tuesday picking up one of my Link Amiibos. One of my Link Amiibos. They launched three of them this week. I'm looking at them right now. But I was talking to the EB Games guy, and he was kind of like frustrated in that like this is another Nintendo thing that they're not going to be able to keep in stock. They've already had people bounding down to the store to ask them about when they can do pre-orders, and he was shocked to find out that people are actually able to get pre-orders in Europe. And I'm hoping that in the next couple weeks they launch, pre-orders in North America, and then we start to get an idea just how many they are going to have of these for September. And they are planning to stock them throughout 2017, so they will keep manufacturing, which is good. That's a good solid 3 months of manufacturing. So I don't know, how confident do you feel in your ability to get, be able to get one of these?
I mean, I've never been the type of person who like stood in a line on for a console or a game on launch day. I've never pre-ordered a game before in my life because I've always been able to get them on launch day, either at the local store I go to here or the Walmart or whatever. So for me, I mean, I really want to like if they tell me, okay, pre-orders will be online at 2 a.m. Canada time, fine, I'll get up. But it was so, you got an NES Classic because you did that. You did something similar to that. I mean, I really, really, really want it, but it seems so difficult to me to get one of these. And I've been reading a book, like I mentioned in the show notes, that depicts the whole war between Sega and Nintendo. And Nintendo has been doing has been I'm sorry I'm gonna curse, but Nintendo has been pulling this shit for ages. They've been doing it with the cartridges, they've been doing it with their old consoles. They always manufacture a limited amount just so that they can keep control of the market. This when I was reading it, I'm not done with it, but as I was reading it, I'm like, those bastards. And I've always been a Nintendo girl all my life. And now I'm in the book, I'm really rooting for Sega because they're trying something different and they want to bring the conglomerate that is Nintendo down. But with this, I'm like, yeah, they're making more, but I'm not really keeping my hopes up.
Yeah, like are they making, they're making more, but are they making enough is the real question. 'Cause I feel like a lot of people wanted an NES Classic and a lot of people didn't get one. And you're right, the reason I got one is I knew Best Buy was putting their pre-orders up at 12 a.m. Pacific time, which was 3 a.m. my time. I set an alarm for 2:30.
I remember
I woke up, I was in my house coat, and I'm sitting on my computer. I'm like, all right, well now it's time to wait for three. And it just feels, weirdly wrong, and very consumerist and just kind of icky, like sitting there, like I have to wake up at a like an indecent hour and sit here and pre-order something because I wanted it. And it's a cool item and everything, but you kind of have to look at everything like this and say, like, I want it, but do I really want, like, I will not stand in line for one. I will wake up at an ungodly hour to pre-order it online, but I will not go into a store. I hate asking retail staff, like, do you have this? When clearly they don't have it. And I mean, I did ask the EB Games guy, like, oh, are you going to be taking pre-orders? And he's like, man, we've been getting asked that all day and all week, and I don't know. And you just see the sorrow come on their face, and you bless their hearts that they're not going to get angry at you because they know you want one as much as they do. And one can hope that Nintendo has stated they've learned from their mistake. They're leaving money on the table, so hopefully, and they're charging more for this one, so hopefully they know that if they can sell these for $100 a pop, they got to make more.
They will. I mean, for me, there's no question that they're going to sell. especially since people have been bitching that there's no virtual console on either the Switch. Is there it on the Wii U?
There's a fairly healthy one on the Wii U, but nothing on the Switch. The Switch is virtual games that they were going to be adding, or old virtual console games, got delayed into 2018. So yeah, there's none. And EB Games guy had an interesting theory where he thought that, you know, the Super NES Mini will come out, it'll drive interest in Nintendo's classic games, mm-hmm. and then they'll launch something on the Switch, like, okay, we also have our virtual console if you want to buy Super Mario World, The Link to the Past, to have on your Switch. And honestly, that's a great strategy, and I'm surprised that they, you know, the NES Mini was something that filled a gap, you know, because they weren't going to get the Switch out in time. Yeah. But I feel like the Super NES Mini might be just a great advertising tool for their Switch to say, like, you didn't get a Super NES Mini, how about you go out and buy a Switch and then get these games? But that's the other thing. You can't even walk into a store and buy a Switch.
Nope.
There's none on shelves.
I've looked for one, and I was like, they're not available anywhere. Because I'm kind of, since E3 rolled around, I'm a little bit more interested. I was never really big into Mario, but Super Mario Odyssey is interesting to me.
Yeah.
I also want to play the Fire Emblem game, Warriors, I think.
Yeah, Warriors.
It's on the DS, sure, well, 3DS, but I want to get the whole HD shtick, so I want to get it on Switch, but where am I going to get a Switch?
I see them often popping up. A good place to, if you are interested in getting a Switch, is subscribing to some subreddits. Amiibo Canada usually posts when some are available, and then if you're in the States, the Nintendo Switch subreddit usually posts when they're available, but they occasionally pop back up. On different retailer sites, but yeah, honestly, I think Nintendo's one of those companies that is just, they've perfected the limited release of stuff, and I would take that back. They haven't perfected it, but they've gotten to a point where they minimize damage to themselves and minimize, you know, public damage. But the NES Mini was one of those where they didn't achieve either. They damaged their company and they damaged, you know, the reputation they have with consumers, where it's like, we're not going to get excited about something that you're going to produce five of.
I have a coworker who tried to get the NES Mini, oddly enough, for her husband's grandmother, because she played a lot of games growing up with her grandson, and a lot of them were on the NES Mini. And I showed her on Slack the link to the Super Nintendo Mini, and she was like, oh no, I'm not going to fall for this again. Nintendo screwed me over trying to get the NES. I'm not going to try to get this one. And they've made a bad reputation for themselves. She's not a quote-unquote gamer, but for people who don't know video games as much, who are trying to get it as a gift or maybe just to try out the games, they're like, well, no, I've been screwed over before with the classic NES. I'm not going to do it this time around again.
Now, maybe that being said, maybe the Super NES Mini, if they see pre-orders coming in, they might, you know, ramp up development again and make sure these things make it onto shelves. And I think that's a smart way of looking at it, because if they're coming out September 30th, that means they must be looking at these and saying, okay, if these sell really well, we need to, you know, take this lever, push it to 11, and make sure we have these on store shelves for Christmas. Because if they don't have these on store shelves for Christmas, my gosh, that is such a crazy mistake.
I'm going to riot.
yeah, exactly. Well, you know, we'll keep an eye out. And as soon as pre-orders go live, we will certainly be tweeting them. But
here's hoping.
I might buy one before I tweet it. We'll see. anyways, you know, this next that segment was brought to you by Simon, who is our patron ad. And he says, Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Val read a book this week.
I did.
I haven't read a book in a long time, and that makes me feel bad. So I need to get on that. You can find Weekly News Desk on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. That's gweeklynews.com. Speaking of books, Embrace the Spoilers, Game of Thrones Season 7 Kickstarter has been funded. This is a Jocelyn and Garrett's project where they spoil Game of Thrones. Valerie, are you into Game of Thrones?
I watched the first episode. quick story, I bought the first box set of the first season because I was interested in it, kept hearing about it on your podcast, kept hearing about it on other geek podcasts. I'm like, well, I like Lord of the Rings and that shtick, so I'm going to try and pick it up. Saw the decapitation, the guts coming out of one person, and the incest at the end of the episode. And I'm like, I'm out!
Okay.
No, I never went back to it.
That is fair. And you know what? This is one of those shows that has a lot of that. And yeah, if you're not a fan of that, oh, who's a fan of that sort of stuff, I guess. But it's the story, right? That you do watch it for the story. But they've hit their goal of $800, and they're looking at stretch goals now. So if you want them to spoil movies like Pirates of the Caribbean, The Dark Tower, Spider-Man.
I've seen Pirates. Not bad.
Not bad? Well, there you go. There's your non-spoiler review. other stretch goals, like make Jocelyn watch Indiana Jones. She's not watched Indiana Jones, guys.
Even?
Yeah, none of them.
Oh, God, Jocelyn.
I think she said she maybe saw 20 minutes of Crystal Skull, and I'm like, that is not good. But, no. Yeah.
Sucks.
Anyways, check out Kickstarter.com and search for Embrace the Spoilers. It will pop right up. Val, thank you for joining the show.
You're very welcome.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad you were able to come on here so we could talk about Mass Effect and Persona and more Fire Emblem. Do you want to let everybody know where they can find you on the internet?
I'm pretty much only available on Twitter. You've tweeted my handle. I don't even know in my heart right now. But if you want to talk to me, I'm more present in the Discord channel than I was before. Mm-hmm. But you can find me easily on Twitter. Val Gravel is actually my real name. So just type Valerie Gravel on Facebook or on Twitter, and you'll be able to find me very easily.
Mm-hmm. And you're playing Mass Effect on PS4, right? Have you gotten much into the multiplayer?
Well, you see, I haven't gotten as much into multiplayer because I missed playing with you guys so much, and I miss playing with an actual party that I know that I can talk to so much. I've played it twice. I've enjoyed the two times that I've played, but I'm like, man, this isn't quite the same.
I totally get it, and I understand, and honestly, one of those things where I wish, looking back, I bought it on PC thinking that a lot of folks I knew bought it on PC. And looking back, I think that it really didn't matter because most of the people who bought it on PC fell off that game pretty hard. So that's unfortunate. But I'm looking forward to playing some Mass Effect at some point, and hopefully the DLC rumors maybe come true. But this has been the Gamers Inn. Visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on amove.tv along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, and The Angry Chicken, and soon Embrace the Spoilers. I saw they put up an Embrace the Spoilers on the feed, basically spoiling a bunch of stuff that happened in 2017. So if you haven't seen all the 2017 things so far, you're going to want to avoid segments of that podcast. I don't know how they're chopping it up, but go check it out. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find Valerie @Val_Gravel. You can find myself at R. Murphy and Jocelyn at Joss Plays, or at the hashtag Nerdtacular. You can find her probably in those tweets. I've already seen a couple shots. Everyone looks like they're having a blast. I'm super happy.
It's the last one? They're not doing any more after that?
The last one of its kind. The last one definitely at Snowbird, but who knows what the future holds. I don't. Maybe Scott does. Maybe we'll find out after this Nerdtacular what future plans are. But, I hope they enjoy themselves, have a great time. I know Snowbird usually is always pumping when the Nerdtacular is going on. So you can also follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found at youtube.com/amovetv. And finally, if you have thoughts on the Super NES Mini and its maybe availability issues, email us info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks again, Val. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and have a fantastic weekend.
Bye-bye.